This is All In. I'm Miriam Sobe. Last year, a new streaming service launched in Indiana called WhoDocs, built to showcase documentaries made by local filmmakers. Today, we'll find out how it's been going, learn about some of the most interesting documentaries you can find there, and talk about what's next for the project. We're joined now by Rocky Walls, Executive Director of WhoDocs. Welcome to the program, Rocky.
Thank you so much for having me back, Miriam.
And I'm going to apologize up front. I had a little dental procedure this morning, so my face is still a little bit numb. So if I sound like I'm slurring, that's the reason why.
I did not notice a thing.
Well, we talked to you last September, which was a few months after you launched WhoDocs. How have things gone since then?
It's been phenomenal. We've gotten a great reception by both audience, you know, subscribers and filmmakers alike.
And what were you expecting that kind of a response? Has it been more than what you expected?
Yes, I think so. There's two sides to that, I think. One is that just by having some conversations, it didn't take long when we sort of started dreaming up this idea. It didn't take long to realize that there was a huge gap between a group of people in Indiana that love shopping local, they love buying local, they love eating local, and they would love watching more locally produced documentaries, which is what WhoDocs, you know, specializes in streaming, but they just have very little, if any, idea where to find them. And so they're on sort of one side of this metaphorical cliff. And then on the other side is all these talented filmmakers in Indiana who spend a lot of their own time and money often producing really incredible stories that often, get posted on Facebook or Vimeo, and a few hundred or thousand people might watch them, and then they just kind of disappear. And so we knew that gap was there, and so we knew there'd be some really positive reception. But on the flip side, the kind of caveat or the downside to it is that, just like anything else, like eating local or shopping local, sometimes it takes a little more effort. And so this isn't the kind of thing where it's like, oh my gosh, all of a sudden it's like, you know, like a new Hollywood movie comes out and just everybody's talking about it and thousands or millions of shares. But we're seeing an organic grassroots growth that's happening that is exactly what we were hoping for.
Yeah. And I think with so much stuff competing for our attention, there's so many hidden gems that we probably wouldn't know of. So probably services like yours are helping to carve that niche out.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And you're right in that it really is hidden gems that we're seeing. I pulled up a quote from one of our subscribers on Facebook just because I thought he captured it really well. He posted back in January. This is a subscriber, Robbie Slaughter, who said, "I don't own a time machine, therefore I can't go back in time and subscribe to WhoDocs earlier, but I sure wish I could." And I asked him, I commented on the post, and I said, "Well, I'm curious, what's been your takeaway after a few weeks of subscribing?" And he said, "My overall takeaway is there's incredibly good work being done by documentary filmmakers in our own backyard. It's easy to think that high quality production, storytelling, and editing is something that requires huge budgets and can only be done in Hollywood." And that just to me captured the essence of this, that there are so many people who, if they only knew that there were so many dozens and dozens, in fact, of really well-made films that tell really important stories right in our own backyard, I think that they'd want to watch them.
I wonder too, does it open doors or open people's minds in the community to go towards a career like that because they can see it actually happening?
I sure hope so. Yeah, absolutely. I mean, unfortunately, because I'm a filmmaker, because I'm in the film industry, I may be more inclined to see news when it's published, but I feel like the only news or the only real heavy media attention that we get in Indiana is usually centered around our lack of tax incentives. And which sort of leads right into this conversation about whether or not a person could truly have a successful career in any kind of filmmaking in Indiana. And I hear often young people, especially, you know, after they finish their school or just want to jump right in with 2 feet into filmmaking, I hear them saying that, you know, folks told them, well, you're going to have to move out to one of the coasts or down to Atlanta. And that's not necessarily the case. I hope that you've got two really incredible filmmakers on the show today. And I hope that that's something that you talk about with both of them.
Yeah, definitely. And so with regards to the lineup for the winter, what does it look like with the topics that you're going to have covered?
Oh, man. Well, so we did decide within our first year here that we would kind of group films as they premiere on WhoDocs into two categories. We have our summer lineup, which is what we launched with, and then our winter lineup, which is presented by Indiana Owned, which is fantastic that sponsors are coming on board to help fund the premieres and the ongoing streaming of these films. One of the things that's most exciting to us is that as we began to create the library and source the library for the summer lineup when we launched, we, you know, were non-existent at the time. So we were reaching out to filmmakers across the state and asking them basically, hey, can we draw up a license to stream your films on this platform that doesn't exist yet? And in contrast with the winter lineup, with the exception of maybe one or two, every single film was submitted to WhoDocs by filmmakers across Indiana that were interested in having their films on the platform. And so we have a wider range of representation across the state. You actually have on the show today, a filmmaker from Bloomington and a filmmaker from way up in Northern Indiana. And we have filmmakers from Richmond and filmmakers from Southern Indiana represented on the platform. So it's really stretching all across the state, which is fantastic. And topics across the board too. We have short films, we have feature films, we have ongoing series of stories that are being represented on the platform, which is just fantastic.
So to clarify, you have more than just documentaries on the service?
So that's kind of a fun question. We use the term documentaries relatively loosely because documentary to a lot of people can mean probably a very specific thing. Like they're probably thinking, you know, of the Ken Burns style, maybe historical documentary, maybe in your mind, even documentary is a specific length. And in fact, documentary just means that we are documenting a real story or we're telling the history or telling the ongoing story of something that's true and real and happening. And even in that, there can be very experimental types of documentary work. And we have a little bit of that on the platform, too. So really, the only thing we're not featuring is things that have nothing to do with Indiana at all, whether it's, you know, because it's about a place or a person in Indiana or by a Hoosier filmmaker. Secondly, we're not doing feature narrative films, so fictional narrative films. There are lots of places that you can get those. And we really wanted to stay focused on documentary.
And so how do you decide what projects you're going to take on your service?
Yeah, so far we have a submission process where filmmakers can go onto the platform and submit their work that they've completed at this point. We are looking for work that's been completed. And our programming committee just watches those often as they come in, since we're collecting those submissions over the course of months. And then we review those with not a super strict criteria, but a criteria that helps us to make sure we have, as broad a representation as possible, and we're covering as many different categories of documentary film as possible. And once again, like reaching geographically and also across racial and gender borders as well, to make sure that we really try put extra effort toward finding stories that are maybe underrepresented.
So it sounds like you're trying to look for other stories as you're getting submissions and stuff. Do you have sort of specific goals around the topics that you want to be covered, or is it just driven by what you get and what people are making?
A little of both. We do have some specific goals. Like I mentioned, putting forth extra effort to represent women filmmakers, which is a category that we have on the platform now, and filmmakers of color. So we are putting forth extra effort to seek and to find those. And then, of course, geographically, again, we started off with our launch being relatively central Indiana focused. And part of that just had to do with the sheer, I think, volume of content being created in the central part of the state. But quickly, we've realized and made connections with folks outside of central Indiana. And so a little bit of extra effort going toward trying to represent those types of films and stories. But no, we also are largely just looking for filmmakers to submit their work because we're excited by the fact that filmmakers across Indiana have lots of different ideas. And we have been surprised. Sometimes we'll get a title and we'll think, what even is that about? And we're eager to go in and watch and find out. Or we'll see a title that seems like it might be about a relatively common or relatively well-known topic, and then find out that the filmmaker took a really unique stylistic approach to telling the story. So it is exciting when you sort of open the door to filmmakers across the state who have a really wide range of creative storytelling capabilities.
Well, we have a couple minutes left before we let you go. Can you tell us what the Watch Local Challenge is?
Yeah, so we started off this year in 2022 recognizing something that I alluded to earlier, that in order to be, a supporter of all things local, in order to eat local, in order to shop local, sometimes you have to go a little further out of your way. And like you mentioned, Miriam, you brought up the fact that we're constantly bombarded with, noise and constantly bombarded by media. And so we have to, sometimes put forth a little extra effort. Me, for example, like my radio, when I get in my car, is always tuned to 90.1. It's the only station that I have programmed in my car, so that I'm not flipping through stations if I'm not listening to something, streaming or a podcast that's on 90.1. And that's extra effort that I put forth to make sure that I'm listening to WFYI. Same thing with watching local, with Hudox and local documentaries. We recognize that these things aren't going to pop up in your feed constantly. They're not going to be on your television right when you turn it on, like Netflix or Disney Plus might be. And so we created the Watch Local Challenge, which is 22 tasks, 22 sort of, you can just, there's actually literally a PDF that you can print out and stick on your fridge or by your television that you can check off as you go throughout the year. Simple things like watch a film produced by a Black filmmaker, or watch a film about our waterways in Indiana and learn a little bit more about how you can protect our waterways. Things like that that are very specific and help people activate and really take advantage of their subscription to Hudox.
That's cool. Thank you so much for sharing that with us. And thank you for speaking with us again. Rocky Walls is the executive director of Hudox. We'll be back after a quick break with some of the filmmakers whose work appears on Hudox. If you have any questions or comments, you can let us know on Facebook or Twitter at All in Indiana, or leave us a voicemail at 866-476-3881. I'm Miriam Sob. We'll be back in 90 seconds. This is All In. This is All In. I'm Miriam Sob. We're talking about Hudox, a streaming service that launched last year, made exclusively for Indiana documentaries. We heard from one of the folks behind the project in the first segment. Now we're going to hear from some of the filmmakers whose work you can find on Hudox. We're joined now by Kevin Weaver, co-owner of Blue Line Pictures. Welcome to the program, Kevin.
Hey, how are you doing today?
Been great. Kevin, tell us about some of these documentaries that you have on Hudox. I think you have a handful of them on there. What's the first one that you made?
Oh, sure. Okay. So the first one, I think we have five that are ending up on Hudox, which is just kind of what Rocky was saying earlier in the segment. It's just such a, honestly, it made me so happy to have to go back through like the list of things we'd made that I kind of forgotten about just because they didn't have anywhere to live. The first one of these five, and there's more that I definitely hope to get on the platform after they kind of are available to go on here. The first one was just a very simple father. And I say simple, just because it was, we just wanted to try it. We'd been doing commercial work and we just wanted to try to make something that was, a film for film's sake. And it's a father and son story called A Stone's Pace, about a master carver, who works at Bybee Stone down in Ellisville, Indiana. And then his father, who also worked at the same stone mill in the engineering department. So it's just kind of a little bit of a look into the limestone industry, which we all know about. We all see it, literally some of us are in some of the buildings built from it, but we don't see the people who, work on it and make it their lives.
That's fascinating. And so it sounds like you're doing this sort of project from a perspective that most folks don't get to see.
I think that's why I love filmmaking in general. Just as it's a a portrait into a different world. You get to get transported somewhere else. And documentary is such a joy of a way to explore that. I think it's also just a way for me to get to kind of, you know, my own curiosity about everything. It's like, oh, if I have to make a film about this, then I'm going to get to learn a ton about, you know, something I would never expect to know more about.
Mm-hmm. And why are you involved in documentary work versus other genres of filmmaking? What led you down that path?
So I do both. But as far as at least I've done post-production on narrative film work and been slightly involved in it. You know, I have a theory on, you know, narrative versus documentary. Narrative is hard. I mean, it's just, it really is. And not to say the documentary isn't narrative. They're hard in different ways. Narrative is hard because you have to create an entire world, you know, out of your head. And then you have to, you know, have a troop of people who can help bring that to life. You have to have, everything has to hit, good actors, good scenes, good lighting. And so the lift is just a lot more than documentary. Documentary, you still need to put a ton of work in. It's just a lot of it. It's a different type of work. It's more thought work. You're reinterpreting reality or interpreting reality and, you know, looking at it from a little bit of a different angle. But I find that documentary work, so I've done feature length documentary work, feature length narrative work is harder in post-production. You know, it goes a lot longer. It's a little bit more of a journey. Whereas cutting together narrative, you know, you have a script. Not to say, you know, there usually you have a loose script when you're putting a documentary together, but it unfolds in front of you sometimes. And I love that process. And so I think they're hard in different ways, but I think documentary is easier to get started, and the bar between making something compelling, is smaller. So I kind of just gravitated towards it because I think I struggled, in narrative. And then once I realized that, you know, a good documentary can be made with a small crew and, you know, a willing heart. Just that feedback loop of getting to meet people and ask good questions just became kind of addictive, honestly. And, you know, I'm really always trying to kind of find a new way to kind of point that energy.
Yeah, no, I totally appreciate that. I think I feel similarly with just my own journey in my career. It's like you're trying to find something where you can use your passion and do the best that you can with a smaller team, because it's just impossible when you have to have a lot of people involved sometimes to get things off the ground. So that's really cool. And so what's been the most challenging part when you first got started with documentaries? You mentioned that, you know, there's the differences between documentary and narrative. But in terms of documentary, what was challenging about that? Or was there anything challenging?
You know, I think every project is its own challenge, right? In different ways. I would say I think the challenge is always finding the right way to do it. You know, sometimes I think the biggest challenges for me are always the personal challenges. You know, there's a lot of trust that needs to be done in some of these stories. You're taking on a very personal thing, you know. That's where I kind of cherish it. I almost see it as sacred sometimes. It is not a made up story, you know. It's not a narrative. It's someone's real story, and I do feel like there's almost like a obligation or sense of duty to do justice to it, you know, or whatever that story is. So I think that makes the challenge new every time, which is why I like it. I think the hardest part is the same as it is for anything. It's that gap between your intention and your skill set. And then also, you know, the business side of everything. It's you know, it's easy to make a documentary for yourself on no budget and do that from time to time. But to try to figure out how to turn it into a viable model, which I still haven't figured out, by the way, you know, step by step, that is the hardest part. You know, so I get to do doc style work in all the, you know, commercial work I do with clients and that type of thing. And that's a joy. But it's not the same as documentary filmmaking, which, you know, doesn't have the angle of the interest of the business or the angle of the mission of the event you're producing a video for. So I would say that the challenge is the personal side and also just, you know, finding galvanizing support around finding someone who maybe wants to, you know, fund a documentary, but not necessarily have a heavy hand in it.
Mm-hmm. And going back to the first documentary that you had about the limestone, the folks involved in Limestone. I'm curious, how do you get people on board with your documentaries? Because I feel like it's even harder to get people on camera than it is on radio, because a lot of people don't want to be on TV, or they think they don't. They're nervous about that. So how do you get folks in those documentaries?
You know, it depends. I would say when someone cares about something, then they want to be on camera. And so I'm looking for someone who wants to be on camera, because they're going to perform better. They want to tell their story. Getting somebody to, if I find that there's a struggle in having a conversation with someone, then I know it's not worth exploring. Mm-hmm. You know, that it's just going to be, everyone's going to feel frustrated throughout that process. So, you know, before we even start a project, oftentimes it comes through, you know, a friend of a friend or an honest personal connection. And you have a lot of just normal conversations first, and also just giving someone to know the intention. You know, we're not getting rich off a lot of these stories. You know, the first one was something we just wanted to enter in film festivals and then, you know, kind of be able to place it, you know, in the future, hopefully. You know, Stone's Pace was made in 2013. So when I, you know, heard about Hudocs and Rocky contacted me, I was just so happy that got to go somewhere. You know, the Bybee family loved it and is something we, you know, put on our website and we're proud of, but it was something that just didn't get shown. So, but to answer your question of how convince people to do it, you know, for the Bybee Stone Company, we say, hey, yeah, you guys can have the footage, you know, try to make it so it's not just a one way street. Now that can always happen if somebody else is foot in the bill necessarily. So, you know, then they might have ownership over the footage. But if we're self-producing a documentary, then I just try to kind of bring the people along for the ride.
Yeah. Yeah. And well, with regards to other topics that you've covered and the projects that you have on Hudocs, what are some of those?
Yeah. So Stone Space is the, you know, Limestone story. A lot of these are, you know, kind of focused in where I live, basically. So in the Bloomington area now. So we also have the most recent one on here is Time to Heal. And that was a really cool project because that was one that Monroe Hospital, which is a, you know, small hospital, you know, rural hospital is what it's considered down in Bloomington area. And they actually approached us to make it, which was really, really cool because we had connected with, you know, Tom Whitehead over there, actually on a narrative film that I worked on, Miss Whitelight. He had let us use Monroe Hospital for the location and just was so kind. And he came to us and said, we have one COVID patient. This was in March of whenever COVID started. It's all blurring together now. And they had one patient and she ended up surviving. And it was, you know, so early in the pandemic, they just wanted to capture it. And so, you know, that story was going back and watching it is such a bizarre little timestamp. But it was, you know, really cool to be approached by Monroe Hospital and then be able to have, you know, a lot of creative control. They just wanted to tell the story of that first patient because they knew it was important and they knew that that survival story was something that they wanted for themselves. They wanted it for the patients, their community, because they all work so hard to save her life, to save Jerry's life. And, you know, it's interesting because Tom Whitehead approached us and then Tucker Gregg, who, you know, one of the guys who he basically helped start Blue Line Pictures, he's from Ellisville. She's like, oh, yeah, I know her daughter. You know, he already knows Ronnie, her daughter. And so that personal connection makes a huge difference. So that's Time to Heal. Man, I realize I'm like a filibusterer. So
no,
I'm
not at all.
The next ones more quickly. Then we have JB. Which is about a, you know, a racer down at the Bloomington Speedway and stars Kent Robinson, who is racing for his father, JB, who also, you know, started a company called JB Salvage. So it's a really cool story that kind of cross cuts between, you know, JB working at the salvage yard and then him racing for his father who ended up passing away. And that was a joy. We got to go through, you know, when people trust us with their home videos, that to me is, well, it's my favorite part. I love going through people's home videos. It sounds weird when I say it like that, but like, you know, get me in a garage with a bunch of old film, bunch of old pictures, and let's scan it all. And, you know, let's find the soul inside of it. And I love doing that with my family stuff too. Although I haven't made a documentary about my family yet, but one day they get the back burner, unfortunately, sometimes as far as filmmaking goes. So that's the story JB And we have Worth the Wait, which is a feature length. And that chronicles the coaching career of Jerry Yeagley. A lot of people don't know, you know, but a lot of people see Indiana soccer, men's soccer, is one of the best programs in the country, but no one knows how it got there. So that chronicles his story of taking IU soccer from a club soccer team to, you know, arguably the best soccer, college soccer team in the country. And then we have Not Pictured, which is another sports documentary. This one might be one of my favorites. It's one of the earlier documentaries we made with IU Athletics. Did a lot of kind of films with them. And it chronicled a player who was on the first national basketball championship basketball team who, you know, basically was lost to history. He should have been on the roster, but he wasn't in the picture for the national team. And his family kept saying he was there. You know, he lettered. He was part of the team. He should be on this roster. And they kept fighting for it. And it was really, you know, one day I think all filmmakers dream to make a large difference in some way, like deep down inside, like to affect change. And I'll hope that I can, you know, we can find some stories that can get us there. But this small change that this documentary made was just such a huge victory. We basically, through the process of the documentary, you know, we got, you know, Bill Torby's name added back on to the picture in Assembly Hall. So they actually, you know, put a new picture up that said Not Pictured, Bill Torby, and one other person who was discovered through this process. So that was just really cool to be able to see, you know, some small change done from work that we got to do. And other people did the work. We just happened to, you know, be the ones who kind of pulled it all together pieced it all together. And it was an honor to be able to do that. And again, to get to know the family, to have them trust us with their stories.
That's really cool. And so when you're putting together a documentary, how do you know when something's going to make it for a good documentary? Or is it something that, like, you've gone through the process and you're like, oh, this isn't going to work. Scratch that. We're starting over.
That's a good question. I don't know the answer yet. I feel like we don't just dive into it until we, honestly, it's a feeling. Usually it's somebody, you know, we talk about a thing, we're like, we have to make that. We just kind of have this feeling that we should make this one. Or if someone approaches us and has a budget, that makes it a little bit of a different story. Then it's like, okay, we can figure this. We can probably make anything into a good story. I do feel like there is a good story in everybody. It's just a matter of synthesizing it, and making it, you know, kind of rise to the top. But I, you know, we'll get this film on here eventually. It's wrapped up in another contract, but we have another film called Feel of Vision about Lonnie Bedwell from Duggar, Indiana, the first blind kayaker to kayak the Grand Canyon. And all Tucker, you know, my friend had to tell me was Lonnie is that line. Lonnie is the first blind kayaker to kayak the Grand Canyon, and he loves overalls and dancing and just is just the kindest soul. And then I talked to Lonnie once. I was like, yep, let's do it. And that's one of the films that we self-funded, which, well, I'll get on Who Docs here eventually because it's, you know, one of the ones we're most proud of. So it's a feeling, I would say. Just like, what do I want to watch? What do I care about? And if I care about it, I'm hoping someone else might too.
Before Who Docs, how were people able to see your projects in the past?
With much difficulty. It depended, you know, so some projects, you know, maybe that's where Feel of Vision is, you know, doing on a PBS tour right now. So it's tied up there. So sometimes I'm broadcast. Oftentimes at film festivals, sometimes just in-person events, sometimes once on Facebook and never again, much to my disappointment. You know, Not Pictured is one of those. It played at maybe Heartland once, and then it was posted online once, and then nothing, basically. And it's also because then, you know, you have to take the time to find the outlet. So I'm so grateful that someone, you know, it's such hard work. I heard Rocky talking about, you know, the hard work it takes to put, you know, these films together. And I'm thankful for the hard work it takes to put a platform together, and what that does for everybody, what that does for the community. And also I've been watching, trailers and a couple other docs on there already. I'm so excited to connect with other filmmakers because I feel like, you know, the process can be lonely and it's so going to be so exciting to, I'm sure as in-person things happen in the future, to get to start connecting with some of these folks that I'll get to watch their films through Hoodux. I think Carmen, who you have on next that we were chatting before here, I'm from Chesterton, and that's where she's from. And I'm excited to, you know, listen to her and watch her films and find out more, and then, you know that there's someone else who has similar passions. I always feel like I have to push for documentary. I teach post-production at IU as well. And I feel like I'm always like on a pulpit being like, documentary is awesome, guys. You guys should consider that as well. So, and I feel like when I meet other people who care about documentary, then I just automatically like them.
Well, thank you so much, Kevin. It's been a pleasure speaking with you. Kevin Weaver is the co-owner of Blue Line Pictures. We'll be back after a quick break. We're talking with local filmmakers about their work on Hoodux, a streaming service for Indiana documentaries. If you want to get in touch with us, you can reach out to us on Facebook or Twitter at All in Indiana, or leave us a voicemail at 866-476-3881. I'm Miriam Sobe. Back in 90 seconds, this is All In. This is All In. I'm Miriam Sobe. We're learning about a few of the most interesting projects on Hoodux, a streaming service created last year that's exclusively built for Indiana documentaries. We're joined now by documentary filmmaker Carmen Vincent. Carmen, welcome to the program.
Hey, thank you so much for having me.
Let's get started with how you got started making documentaries. Can you tell us about that?
Yeah, absolutely. So I attended Valparaiso University for a bachelor's degree in digital media. My freshman year, I got this amazing opportunity to do a video internship in Bethlehem, Palestine, where we spent 2 weeks filming for an arts university there, seeing the Israeli-Palestinian conflict firsthand and how different it was from everything I had heard in the media and from friends and family, and just how we lacked kind of the human side of that whole story really motivated me to come back and do documentary film rather than pursuing Hollywood narrative filmmaking. So that's where it all started for me.
And so you were interested in Hollywood at some point?
Yeah, I was interested in visual storytelling. So filmmaking was what I wanted to do. I've always been a storyteller. It started out writing books and then filmmaking and then documentary.
And it's something that I touched upon in the first segment with Rocky was just how some folks feel like they have to be in L.A. or New York or Atlanta in order to pursue filmmaking. What's your experience been like?
Yeah, I think there's a big pressure for people starting out to be in those hubs like New York and L.A., Chicago, Atlanta. I graduated in May of 2020, so that was right in the thick of the pandemic, and it kind of made the choice for me to stick around in Indiana because I didn't want to pay Los Angeles rent just to stay inside. And as I'm staying here and fostering more of a community here, I realized that, gosh, there are so many passionate filmmakers and storytellers like me here in Indiana, and I don't want to leave that community. I want to be part of strengthening it and bringing more resources to Indiana for filmmaking pursuits. I didn't want to leave.
And so where are you based out of now?
So right now I'm based out of Chesterton, Indiana. It's about an hour away from Chicago, 10 minutes from Lake Michigan. It's a really beautiful area.
Yes, I've been through there. I'm always debating if I should move to Northwest Indiana so I can be closer to the lake.
Oh my gosh, you totally should.
can you tell us about one of the projects that you have on Hoodux called I'm Transgender and like how that all came about?
Absolutely. So it features Sawyer Patrick telling his gender transition story. Sawyer was another one of the interns that went to Palestine with me, and I got to know him really well. Came back with this fire inside me to tell real stories through documentary. And I turned to Sawyer. I'm like, hey, can I tell your story? Because I think you're an amazing human, and I think so many people can benefit from hearing what you've gone through and how you've handled that. So Sawyer, we sat down for an interview. This is the first time I had ever done anything like this. I just set up a camera and asked Sawyer the most thoughtful questions I could think of. And thank God Sawyer was such a good sport and really, gosh, gave me so much to work with. He was so honest and vulnerable about everything he went through with his gender transition, from his father rejecting him to having, you know, how hard it is to have to use women's bathrooms and live in a women's dorm during college. Just all the little micro ways that society tells him that he's not valued for who he is. And that broke my heart. But I also saw in Sawyer this resilience and this hunger to, you know, and have people understand him and his story and people like him. And honestly, like that's very much why I love documentaries, because we all deserve to feel understood in our own skin, and we can't force anyone to accept anything, any ideas. Like, we can't influence what people's beliefs are, but we can help people understand things. And when people understand new ideas and new concepts or types of people they haven't encountered, then that's when we really start like leveling the playing field and coming together and realizing just how similar we all are.
What is it about documentaries that you think helps get stories across and helps people to connect with them?
Yeah, I think the quote, truth is stranger than fiction, is so true. It's one of the rules I live life by, because I just see it happening every day. There are stories you can't make up that resonate with who we are as human beings. And gosh, narrative fiction and scripted fiction can be so powerful in hitting that mark in you. But there's something about documentary and seeing a real story, a real human being open up to you through film. It's just so powerful. Because I think we can all relate to how scary it is to be vulnerable and to share our own stories. So to see someone else do that and have the courage to do that, I think it sparks something in us to maybe want, you know, it lowers that barrier to do that ourselves. And then when we share our experiences as human beings, that's how we grow and evolve and have really meaningful lives. So that's what I'm passionate about.
How important is it for you to work on projects about marginalized communities?
Oh my gosh, it's everything. That's my life's purpose. I feel it in my bones. I myself am from the disability community. I have clinical OCD and generalized anxiety disorder. I'm really passionate about talking about disability and my experiences with it, and also moderating conversations about disability with other groups. And I think that has given me a perspective of what it's like to feel misunderstood for being who you are. And it's not a great feeling. I mean, and Maya Angelou said there's no greater agony than bearing an untold story inside of us. And I think marginalized communities have those untold stories inside of them that have not been given the microphone enough. Like, they need to be on the big screen. People need to hear these stories more. And that's how we become more familiar with marginalized communities, and then hopefully break down that them being marginalized and start to accept and love each other more for who we are.
Well, what do you enjoy most about filmmaking?
I think the best part for me is, like, I tell people, like, I'm growing my family. Every time I make a documentary with someone, they become part of my life. Like, they become part of my family, whether they like it or not. And so far it's worked out that I think they all like it. but it's really special, like, pointing a camera at someone and asking them deep questions about their lives and fears and weaknesses and strengths. Oh my God. Like, how do you honor that, you know, what people are giving you by doing that? And I think being able to reciprocate that when the camera's off and just build relationships with these people that I'm telling their stories is the most rewarding thing I could ever ask for in life. It makes me emotional because I truly do feel like every time I make a documentary, I'm adding a new person to my family. And that's, I mean, what matters more than that, you know?
I mean, it's got to be something where you really have to build trust with your subjects to be able to get them to open up. How are you able to do that?
Yeah, I think that's a really intuitive process. I think trust is such an intuitive thing that we build as human beings. And for me, it starts with, like, letting my documentary subject go at their own pace. I always start interviews with, like, easy questions and, like, go into the deeper and more difficult questions as we build trust. But, I mean, even getting enough trust to ask to do a documentary about someone is crazy. So I just approach it kind of like, you know, like a friendship. Like, hey, can we talk first? And then let me slowly introduce this concept of a documentary film about you. And how do you feel about that? If you're scared, you know what, let's give it some time. And let me address your concerns. I think I've just gotten really lucky and gotten people involved in my films who are just ready to share their story. And I think that's something you can't force, you know, it's something you have to let happen naturally. And as far as trust goes, all I can do is, you know, be upfront and transparent about everything and really honor their story and honor, you know, how difficult the process can be to share your own story and, you know, share some of my story too. So it's not, you know, a one-sided relationship. I'm really passionate about creating these deep relationships with people. And I think through that, that's where trust is fostered.
Can you tell us about your other documentary on WhoDocs called Take Life as It Comes?
Yeah, absolutely. This was kind of a side project I got to do I did a semester abroad in Cambridge, England, and walked into a church because I needed a documentary subject because I just really wanted to make a documentary. And I found this 88-year-old Swiss woman named Nellie Scott Niederberger. She was at the church luncheon, and she told me she was there for the food and the friends, not for Jesus. So right off the bat, I was like, okay, you're interesting. Let's keep talking. And she was just this incredible human being. Like, I want to be like her someday when I'm her age. Everything she has ever done has been born out of amazing courage, doing things that she was afraid of and felt unprepared for or unqualified for, but she did it anyway. And she really embodies the title, Take Life as It Comes, life mantra. So the idea of memorializing her life story was so attractive to me. I just think she has a beautiful story. She moved to England at a young age, became a nurse without speaking any English. She met her love for life there, ended up having to watch him die in her arms. And there are just so many things that she does with such, courage and bravery and independence and trust in herself, like self-assuredness. She's an incredible human. So I had to point a camera at her and ask her some questions. And it ended up being a really touching piece of film, I think.
When it comes to the documentaries that you do, are they mostly focused on a person's story, or are there other types of formats?
Yeah. So for me, I most enjoy focusing on one person or one family, because I think it's really hard to tackle huge topics. For example, if I did a whole film on like the word transgender, I feel like it would be much harder to get people to watch that, because for some people, unfortunately, that's like a trigger word, and it shouldn't be, but it is. But when this is a film about someone named Sawyer Patrick, and you get to know Sawyer as a human being, like it's kind of a gateway into understanding the topic more and being open-minded to understanding the bigger ideas. But I always think that people's individual stories is the most effective way to like introduce yourselves to new ideas and new cultures and new ways of living, new human experiences, because, you know, that's what we do best as human beings, is we connect with one another. So, yeah.
Well, what would your advice be to folks who might be listening that are interested in getting into documentary filmmaking? Is it as easy as just picking up a camera and talking to somebody?
Oh my gosh, I wish. I mean, it depends what you want out of it. If you want like the traditional documentary distribution with film festivals and streaming platforms, gosh, you need to learn the business side of things. You need to learn marketing and finances, accounting, all of that. So it's a big undertaking. I think my biggest piece of advice that I did not follow when I first started is don't work alone. Find a collaborator, find someone else that you can work along with. I always felt like I had to work alone because then I only had to rely on myself, et cetera, et cetera. But doing these smaller films and now wanting to do bigger films, I realized like we all need each other. There's a reason that those Hollywood films and the documentaries, we like Ken Burns documentaries, have so many people listed in the credits. It's a team effort. So I would not put all the pressure on yourself to make this happen all on your own. Get mentors, network with people. And that can be done online now via Zoom. I mean, there's a lower barrier to entry in documentary than ever, but it's also harder than ever because it's more saturated than ever. So I would just lean on the people around you and share your passion and be authentic and honest about what you want to do. And like Nellie says, and take life as it comes, just make up your mind and go.
What has it been like working during the pandemic? I know you mentioned it just now that it's kind of saturated in that field. Do you feel like the pandemic made it even tougher?
Yes and no. So I think the pandemic opened up, like, filmmakers in Indiana can now network with and know deeply filmmakers in Los Angeles and New York and London. Like, that barrier is much lower now. It's so normal to have virtual networking events. And I mean, my contacts list is full of people from all like all across the country. And I don't say that like in a braggy way. I say that because I want people to know that that's achievable for you. Like that is, that's easy to do now. I think where the pandemic has made it more difficult is like more than ever, the types of people who want to start out making documentaries, like we need to find another way to support ourselves too, because documentary right now is not a sustainable career unless you are a Ken Burns. It's, you know, it's really hard to raise enough money to even make a documentary, much less pay yourself. So a lot of these are passion projects that people like me find time to do or make time to do, quote unquote, on the side, but even though it's our biggest passions. And, you know, I video edit for clients during the day to pay rent. So I think the pandemic has opened up a whole world of opportunity, but also shown us like how hard, how unsustainable of a career it can be unless, you know, you get really lucky or, you know, you work at it for a long, long time and eventually break through.
It's interesting because I never really thought of documentary filmmaking as something that you have to kind of work on and then also have another job. I just thought that's what you do for a living. You just make documentaries. So
oh, I wish.
it's definitely eye-opening. I think there's so many careers like that where on the outside it looks so glamorous, but there's so much hard work behind the scenes that people don't see.
Absolutely.
And what are your dreams for your future as a filmmaker? Do you want to keep doing documentary films? Would you like to ever get back to narrative?
Yeah, so I don't think I can not do documentary at this point. Like like I said, I have obsessive compulsive disorder. This is an obsession and compulsion for me. Like it's in my bones. I have to do it. So I will always do that. One of my big dreams is to start a production company in Northwest Indiana so I can make this a sustainable career, not just for myself, but for other Indiana creatives, so that I can hire people to make films for a living. Like that's my dream. So I'm working on making that happen, but that's a long-term goal for sure.
And before we wrap up here, what are some of the things that you're working on next? Do you have anything else coming out on WhoDocs?
Yeah, so right now I'm working on a documentary called Teacher of Patience, and it's about a local Indiana family's efforts to raise disability awareness among first responders. This family, the Felters, they do presentations called Emily Talks, which are about named after their daughter, Emily, who has Down syndrome. They do these presentations for first responders. Emily tags along and meets all these first responders. It's really an amazing story of like what it's like for this family to encounter Down syndrome and what like the amazing person Emily is to be a disability advocate and a self-advocate for herself. I'm really passionate about it being from the disability community, but we're also trying to incorporate it into first responder training programs along with traditional documentary streaming platforms and stuff like that. So I sure hope it can live on WhoDocs one day. But yeah, right now we're nearing the end of post-production and we're going to start those impact campaign plans and distribution plans. So that's really exciting.
Well, I want to thank you so much, Carmen, for joining us this afternoon. It's been a pleasure speaking with you.
Thank you so much. I really appreciate it.
Carmen Vincent is a documentary filmmaker based out of Northwest Indiana. Our producers are Drew Dodlin and Micah Yason. Scott Cameron is our managing editor. Adam Gross is our engineer and composed our theme song. If you'd like a podcast of this show or any past show, you can find it anywhere you get your podcasts. You can also find us on Twitter and Facebook at All in Indiana, or you can leave us a voicemail at 866-476-3881. That's 866-476-3881. I'm Miriam Soap. Thanks so much for listening. This is All In.